This week in the online journal Proceedings of the National Academies of Science, researchers report that they have genetically modified the sperm of a zebrafish. That's a fish you can get in your pet shop anywhere. Now, genetically modified organisms are not a new thing. Scientists have been manipulating the genomes of plants and animals for a while now. For example, you've probably all eaten a genetically modified organism. Could have been an ear of corn or a salmon. But what is new here? What is new is that the germline, the sperm of the animal, has been altered. And that ensures that all the cells in the offspring will also have the alteration and pass that alteration on to their offspring. And if this technique were made to work in human sperm, it could offer a way to permanently correct a genetic defect. Joining me now to talk about this work is Sean Burgess, an investigator at the National Human Genome Research Institute's Genome Technology Branch in Bethesda, Maryland. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Burgess.
Thank you for inviting me.
Did I lay that out pretty well, what a transgenic animal is?
Yeah, I mean, really a transgenic animal is any time a scientist or even a company sticks in a gene that isn't normally in the animal's genome.
Now, we've seen this in plants and animals. As I say, we eat these big salmon that we see around, the genetically modified. We're all eating that corn that's been genetically modified. So this is a common occurrence in the animal world and in the plant world.
Yes, that's correct. And particularly in science research, it's almost everyone uses it. It's an essential aspect of studying biology.
But you've been able to change the sperm. You've done this to the sperm of the zebrafish. Tell us why that's so important.
Yeah, the big difference that we've done is we've taken really the removed the testes from a normal fish, and we've actually been able to grow them in culture and do the genetic modifications completely in vitro, meaning in a tissue culture dish, and then collect the sperm that we've grown, which are now genetically modified, and use it to fertilize an unfertilized egg and create a transgenic animal that way. This is sort of bypassing the normal ways that people make transgenics, which is where you go through something called a mosaic first, which means you alter some of the cells in an organism, but not all the cells, and then you have to raise this animal to adulthood and hope that the transgene is included in the germline, either the sperm or the eggs of that animal.
But in this method, where you change the animal in one step, and did you give it bigger fins, bigger eyes? How do we know that? How do we know the animal is really a new animal?
In our case, we put in what most people would consider a pretty boring gene. It's an enzyme that comes from a bacteria, and really its only value is that when it's active, it cuts a specific substrate and turns blue. That's all it does.
So you see the fish glowing blue a little bit.
Well, you'd have to kill them first, which is not real good for them. But in principle, you could put them in this chemical and see if that enzyme was actually there.
Now, why couldn't this be done before? If this industry has been happening so often and so long, as you say, why has no one else been able to do this?
It turns out it's really hard to get cells to behave normally once you remove them from their natural environment, which is the body, either the fish body or whatever animal's body. Dr. Sakai, the main author on this paper, the senior author on this paper, the real trick that he developed was he identified a cancer that was growing on a zebrafish testy, and he took that cancer out and started growing it in culture. And then it turned out he could actually use that as what's called a feeder layer and actually put what's called a primary culture or a testes that he's removed from a fish on top of that feeder layer, and they behaved more normally. These cancer cells were releasing certain kinds of signals that told these cultured testes to continue growing and dividing and creating new sperm.
Hmm. So was this sort of a serendipitous accident that he found this cancer?
Was it chance favors the prepared mind?
Louis Pasteur line.
Yeah, exactly. He found this cancer, and then feeder layers have been used for other aspects of biology, and he thought very quickly that this was a potential use for this discovery, and and it took him years to develop it, but he was ultimately successful.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's take this now one step further. Now that you can change the offspring of these fish by inserting, you know, fertilizing them with these tests with these new sperm, can you move up the ladder from fish to other organisms?
So far, no one's been successful. Although they're getting closer. They can, in a mouse, for example, they can remove testy tissue, keep it in culture for a little while, and then put it back into a recipient, put it back in, and it will make a transgenic animal that way. Mm-hmm. They can't do it completely in culture in any other organism yet, but I don't think there ultimately would be a limitation in doing that. I think it just takes the right combination of growth conditions to do so.
And what would be the best ultimate down-the-road outcome for this kind of research? What do we want eventually to occur?
Well, for us, I mean, and our approach is fairly limited. I mean, I use zebrafish primarily in my research, so...
we're not going to go to the pet shop and get a new kind of zebrafish. Maybe we are. Could we get one that lights up?
You can buy one that lights up, and that was made in traditional, using traditional techniques, but I didn't make those.
But down the road, I guess what I'm driving at is, and it's a curvy road to drive on, is that, you know, we're thinking about people and curing diseases, genetically modified diseases here.
I think that would be a potential outcome of this. Although we're really decades away from really getting to that point. It's still a long way to go even in zebrafish. Right now we can grow these things in culture for roughly 2 weeks, but to really be able to manipulate them the way we want, we'd want to be able to grow them in culture indefinitely. And that, even that is a hurdle that we need to get past first. The human applications, while real, are very far away, I think.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to Jackie in Rochester, New York. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, if you're genetically modifying the sperm, how does that affect the genetic variability in the species?
All the genetic variability is still there. When a sperm or even an egg develops, it goes through lots of mixing and matching of all the chromosomes, both from the original mother and father. Mm-hmm. All that still happens. You might be able to go in and correct one thing at a time that maybe... bad, or maybe just have some gene you want, but all the genetic variation is still there.
Okay, Jackie.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you. How did you get the gene in there to modify?
For us, and this is where what expertise I brought to the collaboration is we're very good at making retroviruses. They were derived from ones used for gene therapy, actually in humans. And we can use these viruses, and they infect, they go into the cell, and they actually integrate permanently. They take their DNA and stick it into ours and leave it there, or into any organism and leave it there. And we use a virus that's essentially been gutted, so it's not infectious anymore. It's a payload delivery system.
Can you be so precise as to take any, to replace any gene or stick any gene where you'd like to on the genome?
Not with a virus. You have a payload limit size in numbers of bases that's a maximum you can put it in, and you really have no control over where it lands. So ultimately, this is why we'd like to get the culture systems longer. There are techniques to make sure you've made a manipulation in a very precise spot and in a precise way, but those take much longer growth times and in the length of months to be able to do something like that.
Dan in Silverton, Oregon. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I'd like to see, will it be possible someday to maybe have a little miniature whale swimming around in an aquarium?
You probably have a better chance of making a miniature whale by breeding them that way. You know, as dog breeders have done for 10,000 years, if you work hard enough at it, you can find the right combination of animals to make some pretty unusual-looking dogs.
But it is possible that someone in the animal world could hear about your work and say, you know, I could. There's a whole other industry here besides health toward making different kinds of animals.
Sure, I think as you mentioned earlier, there the if w- we've essentially simplified the steps of making a transgenic animal. In terms of the zebrafish, which only takes 3 months to hit sexual maturity, it's not as big a deal. But if you're talking about making a transgenic cow, mm-hmm. and you've got to wait several years for it to be reach breeding, I don't know how long it takes for a cow to get to breeding age, but it's more than a fish. And so making a transgenic cow, if you can make it immediately and not have to go through an intermediate, you could actually save a lot of time and money in the development of it, sure.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Is the fish that you create, is that a such a different fish that you can patent it now?
Well, no, not really. I mean, it's like I said, it's not a particularly interesting fish.
But it's got a genetic makeup no other fish has.
Sure, but who would care? I mean,
not you, but you're a scientist. But if someone said, "Hey, I could sell a million of those fish that he's made," I could make a profit here.
Yes, I guess in principle.
And then down the road, any other patent, any other kind of genetically modified, you know, because this is how these things.
Sure. I mean, and in fact, if you look at crops today, there are a lot of patented seeds that are all genetically modified, and they're protected by patents. Sure.
Yeah. Well, that's why they keep you in the laboratory, you see, because you're not thinking about leaving and starting your own business now. Hang on. Christopher in Sacramento. Hi, Christopher.
Hi. My question is, if we're going to be, modifying the sperm, what about the possibility of modifying the egg?
The egg, in principle, it's doable, but it's a lot harder, right? So, I mean, we're... me personally, and probably most men out there, are making 1,500 new sperm a second, and so it's fairly easy to generate a lot of those. For most mammals, eggs are made very early. The number of eggs is set, and then you just slowly go through them and over time and until they're gone. But sperm is a much more easily renewable resource, if you will.
Okay, Christopher?
Yeah, okay.
Thanks for calling. And I think this weekend they'll be making 30,000 seconds. Super Bowl weekend coming.
That's right.
So where do you go from here?
Where do we go? Our big focus, is, like I mentioned, is to really be able to grow these things in culture for as long as we want. And then it really provides us scientific power in studying zebrafish that hasn't really been available to us. And that's very exciting.
And why is the zebrafish such a great test fish here?
Zebrafish are great. One, as you mentioned, they're pretty easy to get. You can go to a pet store and pay a dollar for one, and it's yours. But what makes scientists excited about them are a couple of things. One, their babies, unlike a mouse or a human, are born outside the mother. So you can watch them start at a single cell, a big one. And you can watch it turn into a fish overnight, really. I mean, with a heart beating and blood circulating. And at the same time, you can see right through them. So you can actually see under the microscope. You can see the heart beating. You can see the liver forming. You can see the eye and the ear. You can see everything. So they're a tremendous tool for both developmental biology and genetics.
I think you just sold a lot of them to biology classes. That'd be interesting to watch that happening. Of course, you got to know how to breed them. That's another story. And getting them to breed.
Sure. Well, they're pretty good at it. Yeah. They'll make hundreds of eggs at a shot.
All right. Well, this is quite interesting. I want to thank you for taking time and joining us this afternoon.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Sean Burgess is an investigator at the National Human Genome Research Institute in Bethesda, Maryland, talking about his zebrafish. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the avian flu, the bird flu. Try to tell you everything you wanted to know about it, how it got started, where it's headed. Maybe there's a vaccine in the making. Stay with us. We'll be right back.